welcome to A Bookish Home. I'm Laura Zara Kopinski. I'm so excited to be sharing a conversation this week with Linda Akeson McGurk, who is the author of a book I adored, There's No Such Thing as Bad Weather, A Scandinavian Mom's Secrets for Raising Healthy, Resilient, and Confident Kids, From Frulitsliv to Hygge. This book really inspired me when I read it to get my daughter outside in nature and really encourage unstructured play. And if you love books like Bringing Up Bebe that give you insights into parenting around the world, I think this conversation is really going to be right up your alley. Linda Akeson McGurk, welcome to A Bookish Home.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be chatting with you today.
Yeah, I'm so happy to have you here. I loved your book, There's No Such Thing as Bad Weather, and I really enjoy your blog, Rain or Shine Mama. And one thing I really love about it is just getting a different perspective on parenting, especially in the book, getting a different perspective from other places around the world, I think is really interesting. So for people who haven't read it yet, could you share some of the backstory of what inspired the book and some of the events it chronicles?
Right. Yeah. So basically what happened was, you know, I grew up in Sweden and I moved to the U.S. when I was in my 20s. And felt pretty integrated, you know, until I had kids and I realized that they were going to have a very different childhood from the one I had. There were some things that were very different. I raised them in Indiana, a rural area, and it was a bit of a culture clash, primarily because I was used to the sort of outdoorsy culture of Scandinavia. And it's a very big deal over there, and sort of nature is considered an essential part of childhood. And so I had this idea in my head that this was like a universal thing, and that's how my kids were going to grow up too. And then I realized that maybe they weren't going to have that because the culture was very different. So basically when my first daughter was born, which was 10 years ago, already then I kind of, that kind of planted a seed for this book. And then I just sort of thought about it for years and years. And then I got to the point where I was, you know, I got a book contract and I moved back to Sweden for almost 6 months with my two daughters to try that out for them and to see, you know, what that would do with them and to give them a chance to try out the Swedish culture. So we were back in Sweden for almost 6 months and then came back and finished the book after that.
And when you were still in Indiana, before you moved, how old were your girls then?
They were 5 and 8 that year that we came back here to Sweden. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things that really struck me, just jumping back a little bit to before you moved back and you were still in Indiana, there were a lot of instances you noted where you sort of felt like a little bit of an oddball with your approach. I think I remember a time where someone pulled over and asked if you needed a ride when you were walking one of your girls with the stroller. Could you talk about some of those instances?
Right. That's kind of how it began. That's when I realized that I was different. Because to me, it was natural to take my baby outside, even in the winter, to have this sort of daily routine of getting outside, you know, going out for walks. But I never saw anybody else outside. And people thought I was crazy for venturing out when, you know, in freezing temperatures with a baby. You know, yeah, like I said, like you said, I had people offer me rides on a few occasions. I had people commenting on it a lot, like, you're brave, taking my picture. And there were just a lot of instances like that that made me feel really odd for being outside. And to me, it was the most natural thing in the world. I didn't even think twice about it. I had other moms asking me, you know, well, when is it safe to bring a baby outside? And In Sweden, babies actually nap outside in the winter in the freezing temperatures, and it's recommended by doctors and it's supported by society.
Right.
And here, I was almost afraid to do it because I was worried that somebody would see it and call Child Protective Services on me. So
Right.
it's
Well,
very different.
I was just going to say that's one of the parts I thought was really fascinating and something I was really drawn to. It reminded me a little bit of Bringing Up Bebe. I don't know if you're familiar
Yeah, it's one
with
of my
that
favorite
book.
parenting books. Yes.
Well, that's what it really reminded me of, and just that idea of depending on where you're living in the world, you're going to get very different advice from experts and doctors even. So that idea of in Sweden, you're getting advice to make sure your baby's outside every day and getting outdoor naps, and here that's very different. And the examples in Bringing Up Baby are so different as well. So in a way, it kind of I think it relaxes me a little bit to have that sense of, okay, you're going to get
Absolutely.
told different things, and maybe you kind of have to find what works for you.
Yeah, parenting is really, it is a cultural thing. I mean, it is very different in different parts of the world, like you said. And but it's easy to sort of be in this bubble and think that just because you do it a certain way here, that's the only way, like that's the right way. But there are a lot of different ways. And but with the whole the outdoorsy thing, there are so many research-backed reasons for doing that. That's and then but then there are other good things that are good about American parenting culture. If you can talk about one culture, it's a little more fragmented here. I think there's it's almost tribal. There are so many different factions within parenting culture in the U.S., which but that's a whole nother thing. But
Right. Well, in terms of, I think what I really found to be the most helpful takeaways in terms of looking at parenting from the perspective of someone living in Sweden was that idea of outdoor play. And when you arrived back in Sweden, can you talk about some of the things that really struck you? That you felt like you would not see in the US in terms of that outdoor play and
So since a lot of it I was already familiar with since I grew up in Sweden, but then also I didn't know how much had changed because I'd been gone for 15 years. And during that period, of course, we've had the whole rise of electronic media, which has just completely changed the landscape for parents and children. So I wasn't sure what that would have done, but immediately when I came back here, I noticed, the one thing that really strikes you is as you drive through town or even in the country, like you see so many people on foot, both kids and adults, and it's like a huge difference. And this sort of everyday mobility is very, it's also part of the lifestyle here. You walk places, kids walk or they ride their bikes. And they're just out and about in a way that you don't really see that much in the US. It's the US is a lot more, it's constructed for cars and it's not as kid friendly. So even if, if the kids wanted to be outside more, it's hard because you have all this traffic. And in Sweden, that I think that's still valued a lot. City planners have to sort of take that into account when they plan cities and, to make sure that kids have safe ways to school and that there's enough park space or green spaces and things like that with new development. And another thing that I wasn't sure about that had, if it had changed was, like I said, with the whole electronic media. And I think, and of course, things that has changed here as well. I think it's harder here for people to get kids outside today. I think parents have to work harder, just like in the US. I think this is like one of the big battles today between parents and children. Because kids get so drawn into their electronic media, it is super addictive. And then you have the parents are trying to sort of counteract this. And the Swedish or Scandinavian parents are kind of in the same boat, but I think the culture here still supports outdoor play and prioritizes it in a way that it makes sort of a natural counterweight to this electronic media. So you don't see little children like toddlers and so forth being stuck in front of the TV as much and using tablets and things like that as much either. And there are statistics to support that. So there's still a very strong outdoor culture here, despite the rise of electronics.
And it almost seemed like when I was reading that parents there have a little bit higher of expectations for what they think their kids can handle outdoors and are maybe a little less. I'll give you an example. One thing that struck me, I'm a school librarian. I'm staying home with my daughter this year, but I was noticing this after I read your book last year. Here, someone will come on the announcements and say, it started to rain, no outdoor recess today, or, oh, the temperature has dropped to this certain point, no outdoor play today. And that's just a given, and I had never really thought about it before. But you write about how that's really very different, in Scandinavia. Could you talk about how the schools and I think even the parents approach like the weather and outdoor play with young kids?
And this was one of the things that really frustrated me in the US, that my kids, once they started school, were not given much recess, and whatever little recess they had disappeared completely in the winter because it was either too cold or too windy or too rainy or too icy, or there was always something that prevented them from being let out for recess. And I was constantly frustrated because I grew up with the saying, there's no such thing as bad weather, only bad clothing, which is an old Scandinavian saying, and it's kind of what all parents and adults sort of use to get the kids out, even when the weather is less than ideal. And I guess the reason for that is that you don't want the kids to think that, well, it's only okay to be outside and play if it's 70 degrees and sunny, which it never is in Sweden, or very rarely anyway. So, we would be hibernating. And I can see this a little bit in the US too, because there are differences between different states. So, like the tolerance for snow and cold is much higher in Montana than it is in California and Florida, for example. So, there is definitely a difference between states in the US. So, Sweden, I think, is on that one side of that spectrum, where here kids are definitely expected to play outside every day regardless of the weather. The one exception that they would make is if it's like thundering and lightning, then yeah, the kids can stay in. But other than that, no, they are expected to dress for the weather, and this is so ingrained, like all parents know about it. Because that was also another problem that the American school had that my kids went to, was that most kids did not come dressed for the weather. And so that kind of put the school in an awkward position. They try to provide some spare clothes and so forth for the kids who didn't have any, but it was an inconvenience. But in Sweden, all parents, they know what to expect. The kids have, their extra outdoor gear at school, and recess is outside, and the kids are also expected to play outside at home in all weather. And I think the adults also model this behavior because the adults go out in all weather too. They may not stay out for hours if it's pouring down, but they still sort of have this sense that, well, at least I'll go for a walk, around the neighborhood for half an hour, and because it makes me feel better. So this is very sort of ingrained in the culture.
And you even got, I think it struck me, a list. I think when your daughter started preschool, maybe, of it wasn't like bring crayons, bring paper. It was like bring full rein gear and,
It was all,
mittens and all. But I remember being struck. It was a significant part of the day they were outside.
Yeah,
Is
and
that
that
right?
it varies between, from preschool to preschool, but it's pretty typical for the just like a traditional preschool. And preschools are not quite, they're a little different from what they are in the US. They are both an educational facility, but they're also a form of daycare for working parents. So there are kids that are at preschool all day, all day pretty much, every day of the week. And they play outside, I would say typically, at least in the morning, once in the morning for a couple hours, and then again in the afternoon for a couple hours. And if the weather's nice, it's common for them to have, their snack outside, and whenever the weather is nicer than normal, then they try to make the most of it. But even in the winter, yeah, they are typically outside for several hours every day. And
Oh,
then,
that is
yeah.
wonderful. I wish that that is something that would catch on here. Here, I feel like if you say the kids are outside a lot during the day at school, it's because, oh, they got out for, 20 minutes in the morning and 20 minutes in the afternoon. That's a big culture shift.
But the kids really need they need that time, because for and because when they are outside, they get into these sort of deep this deep level of play, and you don't get to these to get to this level of imaginative play, they need more time. It takes 20 minutes is not enough time for them to even get into any role-playing games or anything like that. They need a lot of time for that. So that's why it's important to have longer blocks of time outside. And the kids tend to play more imaginatively outside as well. So.
And is that one of the things I was noticing when you were talking about your kids' school experiences in Sweden, that there was that focus on getting outside a lot in all kinds of weather, and you're saying that that leads to more of that imaginative play. But I was struck, it seems like in general too, there was more of a focus on play, and you were noticing some differences in like the general curriculum and routine. Could you talk about that a little bit?
Yes, this is a major difference, because when I enrolled my daughters in preschool in the US, I thought preschool was about play, because that's, just looking at the research, play is how children learn, and but it was all about getting ready for kindergarten. It was all about the academic facts, the learning your colors and numbers and letters and even wall words. And it was all about this academic preparation. And there was just not really, there was no time for play. And the preschool teachers even felt guilty about letting the kids play. And I was like, I couldn't understand, they're 3 years old. What do they expect them to do, But that's just because coming from where I come from, it's just, the emphasis is definitely on play in the Swedish curriculum for the preschool. And there is a national curriculum, and it really it actually entitles the kids to outdoor play. And they are not so interested in teaching these academic facts. It's a lot more child directed. So the kids kind of, it's not that there's no structure, because there's a structure, that they eat at certain times, and they have sometimes they have a story time, or they might have circle time when they sing and so forth. So some things are pretty similar, but it's more about the big picture ideas, like learning about our shared democratic values and social skills, like, collaboration and cooperation. And also the preschool teachers said they're not so interested in seeing if the kids can count to 10 or 100. They're more interested in seeing if the kids are showing interest in math. And so that is a big difference. They just don't rush these milestones. And there's a lot of they just sort of work these sort of pre-literacy skills into their everyday routine. They build things, so that's part of, that's science. They go out in nature, and they might collect rocks and leaves and things like that. And but it's not sit at your desk, you know, learn how to trace letters. Like that just, that doesn't exist in Swedish preschool.
Mm-hmm. That resonated with me so much, especially with my experience in an elementary school. And even before I read your book, I had just kept hoping the pendulum would maybe swing back a little bit, because I do feel so strongly that that learning through play is so important and not rushing the academics. And with my own daughter, I'm really trying to keep that in mind. And I think it was helpful to see that that is successful in other parts of the world, even though we seem to be so, I don't know, it feels like parents and teachers were very nervous now about, you know, what age are they starting to read and have they learned this in math? And we're less focused on giving them this childhood full of play. And you can still be, I mean, I'm a librarian, so I'm obviously very focused on literacy, but more from the perspective of how can I help you to love books as a young child, not what's your level and that sort of thing. So I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, and that is super important too. I mean, they've even done studies on this showing that pushing reading at an early age really does not help the child. Yeah, you can teach a child to read at age 4, if you know, but when you look at when they get older, what they've seen is that the kids who are pushed to learn faster, they don't enjoy reading as much when they get older, and they also don't have the same level of comprehension as the kids who are allowed to take their time. So, but unfortunately, it has become very common, like to and I think it's part of this sort of fear-based culture that's spreading. We fear that our children are going to fall behind, and it's very unfortunate because we're rushing them to the next level, and we don't let them have the time and space to be in the here and now. And they only have this one childhood, and it's pretty short window of time to begin with. And so it's really, I hope, I am like you, I'm hoping the pendulum is about to swing, and we're seeing tendencies in some places in the U.S. But I think at this point, I think, unfortunately, I think it's mostly sort of on the coastal regions or in the cities where you have, in areas where you have more choices, because there are preschools who you know, specialize in being, you know, more play based and so forth. But most parents are probably not going to have the choice. I mean, in rural areas, you have maybe one or two preschools, and those are your choices, and they're usually traditional, and it's going to take a little longer for this sort of mindset to change.
Mm-hmm. Well, one sort of, you know, really shifting the pendulum type of school you talked about was some of the forest schools in Sweden. And I thought that was fascinating. Could you share a little bit about your visits to those?
Yes. So forest school is a Scandinavian invention, if you can call it that. They first started popping up in Denmark in the 1950s, and then they spread to the other Scandinavian countries from there. And the whole idea of forest school is to basically raise kids more or less outside, where you spend the majority of the day outside. You know, the kids eat outside and they play outside. They even go to the bathroom outside if they're not close to the preschool building. The whole idea being that, you know, A, it's really good for their personal health. Being outside, they have, you know, lower incidences of obesity, and they have better motor skills. They have fewer sick days, and they are also more focused. So, and as a bonus, the staff that work there, they actually have fewer sick days as well, because the germs just don't spread as quickly outside as they do inside. So they're all
that's very appealing as a teacher.
Right. So there are all these sort of personal health benefits. But then the other aspect of this is that they want to be outside in nature, because they want the kids to to learn to appreciate nature and sort of have this affinity for nature. And research has shown that kids, you know, in order for kids to become attached to the natural world, I mean, it goes without saying, but they actually have to be out there first to sort of form these bonds. If a kid is never outside, then they're not going to care about the trees or the birds or the butterflies, you know. It's so they have to be out there. And so combining these two, the forest schools have been really successful. They are a very popular form of preschool in the Scandinavian countries, and they have now spread to the U.S. So there are over 200, at last count, over 200 in the U.S. at this point. And the ones that are out there have long waiting lists. So I think the forest school movement is one of the greatest things that has really happened in early childhood education, and especially in the U.S. I think they have the power to really show people that this is what childhood should be about. They should be out there jumping in puddles, getting muddy, you know, picking earthworms out of the ground, and just learning by doing, getting the sensory input, which is another huge issue today. There's so many kids out there with sensory issues. Nature has everything a child needs. You can use all your senses outside. And that's a pretty big deal. So,
yeah, that was one of the things that struck me with having a toddler. Just that whole idea of, I hadn't really thought about that before. Mm-hmm. When, you know, when she was first starting to walk, you know, you're toddling on this uneven ground, which was, you know, great practice. And then they're digging in the mud, yes. And that's a sensory experience. Uh-huh. And you know, it makes so much sense when you do stop and think about how much they're gaining beyond just feeling good from being outside, right. And having fun. It is,
right.
It is so good for them.
Right.
I guess, you know, for a parent who, you know, here in New England, we are heading into those, you know, cold winter months. For somebody who sort of wants to take some first steps to, you know, get their kids more into nature, do you have any advice or any takeaways, from doing, your research or being in Sweden that you would pass along?
Yeah, I think especially in the U.S., I think parents are going to have a key role when it comes to getting their kids outside, because there is just less sort of institutional support for outdoor play in the U.S. So, and also because as a parent, you know, when your kids are very little, they need somebody to accompany them outside until they're old enough to go out on their own. So, you know, parents can really do a lot in that regard. And I think the first thing to do is really like look at your daily lives, look at your schedule, because I know time constraint is like one huge barrier that a lot of parents mention. So, you know, maybe because I know a lot of kids are very scheduled today. So, you know, look at those schedules and see, is there anything that isn't really essential? You know, can we, if time is an issue, even try to schedule in daily outdoor time, try to find a day, time of the day that works well for your family. And that could be different from, you know, one family to another. Just try to make it a daily routine, sort of make that commitment that, yes, we are going to get outside as a family. Because it's good for adults too. It's not just for the kids. I mean, I know myself, when I get stuck in front of the computer, don't get out, you know, all day. Then you know, your brain just doesn't work as well anymore. Mm-hmm. So it's important for us to get outside too, and sort of try to find what that minimum number is, and then try to work your way up to a little more outdoor time every day, and sort of utilize the resources that you have in your town or neighborhood, you know, try and find those green spaces. And it doesn't have to be a manicured park. It could be just what I call scruffy nature area. There are usually lots of those around that where kids can just kind of dig and build forts and, you know, where people won't get annoyed if they climb the trees or, like I said, build dens or something like that. So that's definitely, you know, making a commitment. That's the first step. And then, of course, you're going to need some gear as well, especially if you live in, yeah, like New England or some other cold climate. It does take some gear. And you don't have to have the most expensive gear. I usually tell people just to buy the best quality gear that they can afford. But, you know, there are ways of, you know, there are places that where you can buy used gear. So try to check out those types of sites, and also work with layering a lot. That makes your clothing more flexible, so you can use it for several seasons. But a good, mm-hmm. you know, a good base layer is always always good to have on hand. Merino wool is the, you know, yeah, it is, that is expensive, but synthetic works as well. And then rain gear for the rainy season, rain boots, I can't get by without those. And good rain gear. In Scandinavia, we use sort of splash pants. They look like little coveralls, and they go all the way up on the child's chest, and they're ideal for muddy play. And you can get that. So in the U.S., you have to just work a little harder to find that kind of gear, because it's not typically sold in like regular department stores, which is another difference here. You'll find that in pretty much any store. But if you just mm-hmm. do a little research online, you can find a lot of that stuff. And then, of course, for winter, you know, good coveralls for the smaller children, insulated. That's your outer layer. Look for stuff that is windproof and waterproof, and good muck boots in the winter too. You know, insulated boots that are also have some rubber, like a rubber sole with, yeah, covered with rubber, so to keep water out. So that way, you know, and then yeah, just hat and gloves and waterproof gloves too. But one thing with the preschools here in Scandinavia, they also have big dryers, because no matter, you know, how well you dress the kid, like they'll find a way to get wet either way. So, mm-hmm. so they actually have a way to dry the kids' clothes in between outdoor sessions, because when you're out for, you know, hours on end, then they need to have a way of drying their clothes too. So,
yeah, that's really helpful. Well, I think we're, I think we tend to be a little bit more used to getting outside in the snow, because that's fun and you're building things and all of that. Yeah. But the idea of, you know, having your rain gear ready for a cold, maybe rainy day and stuff, I think is harder. But when you, but I think you know, if you have a week in a row where it's raining every day, I think it can be, you know, really helpful to have some of that gear ready. And
absolutely.
I think it's a good time to start getting some of that ready.
Yeah.
Well, my other question, I'm always interested about sort of the behind the scenes of the writing process. And I'm curious for you what the writing process was like for the book, and also what you're working on now, if you could give a little of the kind of behind the scenes of that.
Yeah. So it was interesting, because like I said, I started to think about the book already when my first daughter was born, which is 10 years ago now. And I had been processing it in my mind for several years, and I had a draft on my computer, and I kept going back to it, adding snippets here and there, just little episodes from our lives. You know, I wrote them down as they happened, and didn't really know that it was ever going to amount to anything. But then I finally decided that I was gonna, you know, do something with it. And it was actually, I had an editor contact me, so that kind of became the catalyst. Somebody who found my blog, and she was interested in, you know, she just had some questions for me. And I mentioned that, you know, I'm working on a proposal, a book proposal, and she was very interested in seeing it. So that's kind of what pushed me to finalize the book proposal, and actually believe that I had a really, you know, I had a a good idea. And it ended up being a different editor that bought the proposal eventually. But either way, I had these 6 months in Sweden, and it was kind of like I had always imagined. It sounds so cliche, but as a you imagine these like big authors like Hemingway, and they go away to this cabin in the woods and they sit there and write, and they have no contact with the outside world. And it wasn't quite like that, but it was. I mean, I rented this old homestead from the 1800s, and it was kind of primitive in a way, but it really gave me this peace of mind to just focus on my writing. And I'm really happy that I was able to do that, because for 6 months I did very little but just write, and I just delved into this project, and yeah, and it came out well, so.
Yeah, well, I think that's a common, at least for me, I didn't realize until the past few years that if it's a nonfiction book, oftentimes you are just writing a proposal first, not the entire manuscript, which is a little bit different from fiction.
Yes, it is. Yeah. So you
Yep.
just, but the proposal is very involved. So you have to really know, you have to know what each chapter is going to be about. And it took a lot of time just to prepare the proposal. It was a lot more involved than I had expected, but it was good in a way, because it really made me try my ideas and get a really good structure. So once I started writing, I had a really good flow, because I knew exactly where I was going, where each chapter was going to lead. And of course, there were some changes along the way, but overall, I knew where I was going with it.
Well, I always like to ask guests for reading recommendations. That's something we share a lot on the blog and in the podcast. Have you read anything lately that you'd want to recommend to
Yeah,
listeners?
actually, I don't have enough time to read, but I just started reading The Gardener and the Carpenter by Alison Gopnik. And I haven't gotten through it yet, but I really love what I've read so far. And she's really sort of dissecting this whole concept of parenting, which is a pretty new phenomenon. And interestingly enough, there isn't really a good translation for that word in Swedish. It is just an English word, I guess. So she is really, talking about how we as parents, how we've become so focused on our children as sort of as a product, like we're trying to make them a certain way, whereas so that's where the difference between just sort of nurturing a child, like you nurture a flower and make it grow into something, rather than trying to build a child exactly the way you want it. So it's very interesting so far, and I think a lot of her ideas are similar to the ideas that I have written about in my book. So,
Oh, it sounds like it. That sounds really interesting. Well, I will definitely link to that and, of course, to your book in the show notes. Linda Akasem-McCurk, thank you so much for talking with me. And I just found the book so inspiring. And if people want to learn more, I definitely think they should pick it up. There's no such thing as bad weather. And as you mentioned, it's out in paperback, and I'm going to do a book giveaway for it. So that's great, people. And I'll list information about that in the show notes as
Right.
well.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It was great to chat with you today.
I hope you head over to your local bookstore or library to pick up a copy of There's No Such Thing as Bad Weather. I think it will be really great inspiration, especially as here in New England, at least, we are heading into the cold, dark winter months. You can find Linda's website at rainorshinemama.com and follow her on social media at rainorshinemama. And I'm happy to announce I'm going to be offering a book giveaway for There's No Such Thing as Bad Weather. You can head over to @abookishhome on Twitter or Instagram to learn more, or visit my website, abookishhome.com, where you'll see information on the book giveaway in the show notes. There you will also find links to all of the books mentioned on this week's episode. If you're enjoying the podcast, please share it with a friend and be sure to subscribe. If you could take a moment to rate and review, I would be so grateful. It would really help people find the show. And if you decide to read a book mentioned on the blog or podcast, it would be so wonderful if you could share that on social media. I'm at A Bookish Home. I'd really love to hear if you're inspired to pick up any of the books that we've been talking about. Thanks for listening and happy reading.